A special report on property.
Prime numbers. Commercial property has bounced back, but only in the best locations. In some corners of the commercial property market, a slight whiff of self-congratulation is in the air. Doom-laden warnings issued in 2008 and early 2009 that commercial real estate would be the next shoe to drop have not come to pass. Opportunistic investors hoping to cash in on the sale of distressed assets have been largely disappointed. Governments have intervened less than they have in housing. There are fewer votes in office buildings and shopping centres. Commercial real estate was not at the heart of the crisis, says a big fund manager in Germany. Investors' interest in the asset class is growing, thanks in large part to the extreme macroeconomic environment. Near zero interest rates make the yields on offer from property look attractive. The cash flow from tenants is more stable than that from equities, where values zigzag day by day and dividends can suddenly be suspended by the management. And unlike many types of bonds, property is seen as a useful hedge against inflation because rental agreements can be renegotiated with tenants to reflect rising prices. Bulls note that Norway's $543 billion state pension fund, one of the world's largest sovereign wealth funds, is starting to allocate money to property. It made its first real estate investment in January, spending £452 million, that's $723 million, on properties in London's Regent Street. Led by Britain, which had seen the steepest fall of the big property markets, values are rising again. According to IPD, which provides information on property markets, British commercial property delivered a total return of 15.2% in 2010, its strongest performance for 4 years. Investing in property has paid off handsomely for many since late 2009. Global REITs performed twice as well as global stocks and bonds in the 12 months to the end of September 2010. Take a closer look at this resurgence, however, and the picture becomes more complicated. In one crucial respect, the bubble in commercial property was less dangerous than in the residential sector. There was no development boom and hence no oversupply. The enormous amount of liquidity sloshing around the system was directed at acquiring existing properties rather than building new ones. This was an excess of capital, not an excess of cranes, says Jonathan Gray, the boss of Blackstone's real estate business. That flood of money drove up debt burdens and property values and reduced yields, the ratio of the income flow from a property to its value. Madness became routine. The 110% loan-to-value financing for a hotel in Germany, offered to a borrower with no knowledge of either hotels or Germany, the fact that yields on Grafton Street in central Dublin, hardly a retail paradise, came close to those in some of the world's most prestigious shopping streets, the willingness of staid fund managers to base their investment case on capital gains rather than rental growth. If the market had been left to run for a little longer, it might have become crazier still. Just before the crisis broke, there had been talk of securities made up exclusively of riskier development loans. But in contrast to the overbuilding of the early 1990s, when rapid rental growth persuaded developers to dig lots of holes in the ground, this time, lenders and investors were disciplined enough to want income-producing properties. They were just not disciplined enough to price the risks correctly. Indeed, if there is going to be an imbalance in commercial property now, it is more likely to involve a scarcity of supply. As prospects for economic growth gradually improve, demand from large companies, which are sitting on lots of money and are able to take a long-term view of the business cycle, is picking up. Yet there is very little development in the pipeline, at least in the rich world. Estimates from CBRE show that 65% of the new office space due to come on stream in big cities between 2010 and 2012 is in Asia and just 8% in North America. As a result, says Brett White, the firm's boss, vacancy rates will go down and rents, which have already stabilized in many places, will go up. Power is very quickly shifting from the tenant to the landlord. Some are well placed to benefit from a prospective squeeze on space. A cluster of new buildings is going up in London with nicknames like The Shard, The Walkie Talkie and The Cheese Grater. Francis Solway, the boss of Land Securities, a big developer, says his firm made a conscious decision at the start of 2010 not to be too risk-averse. it has since committed itself to development projects costing over £1 billion. Mr. Solway reckons that there could be a shortage of new office space in London by the end of this year. Completion of his next project in the city is not due until 2012. Outside London, the chances of an immediate surge in new building are slight. Debt financing for development projects, which lenders inevitably class as risky, is very tight. Land Securities has been able to start building in part because it raised lots of equity during 2009 and in part by joining with others. The walkie-talkie building, work on which started in January and is due to be completed in 2014, is a joint venture with Canary Wharf Group. And London is arguably a special case. The city's leases tend to be unusually long, often 25 years, which means that tenants in old offices whose leases are due to expire in the next few years may want to up sticks for a modern building. In any case, all this talk of rising values and space constraints can be misleading. The recovery in commercial property is confined to the best, or prime, assets. Prime is an overused word in the industry, but in essence it means the best buildings in the best locations, with good tenants and long leases. For offices, that means buildings right in the centre of big, international cities. For other types of commercial property, it might mean something different. A great logistics centre with a long lease, for instance, might be near a motorway and nothing much else. In the boom, the distinction between top-quality assets and lower-quality ones, also known as secondary and tertiary, blurred. Money chased property of all sorts, closing the yield gap between the best and the rest. Not anymore. Investors are now generally much more conservative, in part because they have more of their own equity at stake. That points them towards big cities where it is easier to get into and out of investments, and where demand from high-quality tenants is concentrated. Money that had been raised to buy distressed assets was also switched into safer ones when it became clear that bargain properties were not coming to market in great numbers, of which more to follow. In a faint echo of the boom itself, this weight of money chasing safe assets carries risk. Some think that prices for prime properties have already bounced back too far. The next bubble may be underway in some markets, says Matthias Danner of Deka, the largest provider of open-ended property funds in Germany. Correlations also tend to go up when property companies chase the same sort of tenants and locations. A portfolio of city centre office buildings full of blue-chip banks looked stable until the crisis. And the desire for secure, long-term leases can easily backfire if interest rates rise, which will make yields look much less appealing. A real snapback in interest rates is the big real estate risk, says Mr. Gray at Blackstone. Blackstone's strategy is to invest opportunistically. It looks for empty and run-down buildings that it can improve and sell. For less ambitious investors, the obvious way to find better value properties will be to take on risk gradually. That might mean accepting shorter lease lengths, with a view to refurbishing a building on expiry and then increasing rents. It might mean staying in the biggest cities, but plumping for lower quality assets, or moving into the best locations in secondary cities. Or it might mean going for the very best assets in less attractive countries.